Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, the Talking Heads, one of the most influential bands in modern music, are celebrating the 40th anniversary of their iconic concert film, Stop Making Sense. Restored in 4K and re-released this fall and winter, it will screen on October 30th at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan with a live appearance by Jerry himself. And the band's 50th anniversary, and to talk about it all, is Jerry Harrison. Jerry, congrats on 50 years of this legendary band. Can you believe it's been 50 years?
No.
Absolutely wild. Well, the band began as the Artistics at RISD, at the Rhode Island School of Design. Now, how did you first connect with David, Tina, Chris, and what drew you to join the Talking Heads?
Well, they were a trio, and they had been together in New York for a while. They had become the Talking Heads. The Artistics was just David and Chris. I, of course, had been in the Modern Lovers, and the Modern Lovers, the record that we made as basically demo tapes, came out in early 1976, and I think that piqued their interest in me as a potential fourth member. And Chris France's parents knew Ernie Brooks's aunt and uncle in Pittsburgh, and that's how phone numbers were exchanged, and then I went down to work with them, and it gelled almost immediately, so it was great.
Can you describe the New York CBGB scene of the mid-70s and how it shaped the band and your sound?
There is a sort of, first of all, the history of New York music, that particularly with the Velvet Underground being the sort of the fathers of it. And it wasn't just bands in New York. I think that the Stooges out in Michigan, who then came to New York, were sort of had a similar ethos. Definitely the Modern Lovers. We were heavily influenced by the Velvet Underground and the Stooges. Then I think it was Patti Smith, and then it sort of exploded at the scene at CBGB's.
You know, so there's always legendary stories about, like, the early gigs, like even before you get a record deal. What was playing, you know, in clubs and so forth like in the very beginning?
What's great about the early days of a band is that you play all these weird places, and they're really memorable. You're very close to the audience, so therefore you have almost like personal interactions with, particularly with people that are up close. As you get into theaters, and certainly if you get into civic centers or something like that, it's a little more distant and a little more sense of a sort of dispassionate feeling. I think that every band looks back on a lot of their early gigs or the medium-sized theaters where they really feel the audience dancing and their excitement.
Sure.
And in many ways, that could be more exciting than playing for 100,000 people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The iconic film, by the way, Stop Making Sense, I can't believe that's 40 years old. How did that actually come about, Jerry?
Well, we were on tour, and we had created the show that you see, and I think we all felt that it would translate well to a concert film. And we had made the decision that we didn't want to have any talking in the film. We didn't want it to be like The Last Waltz. We wanted it to be just purely music. And I think Jonathan Demme and Gary Getzman had seen it and agreed. And actually, I think David Byrne and Jonathan met in a hot tub in the valley. And that was sort of how the connection was made.
Wow.
And Jonathan was not a particularly well-known director at this time. He had done Melvin and Howard and a couple of, you know, he had done some movies with Roger Corman, but was not, you know, this is way before Silence of the Lambs. And
sure.
I mean, you know, and other films where he's really, his notoriety grew. But he's such a music lover. And if you go back and watch Jonathan Demme films, you always see that he gives a lot of space for music when he brings it in, you know, Something Wild, when the Feelies are playing that, the sort of reunion, high school reunion, he gives a little bit of time for them actually to be performing. And this is really different than a lot of other directors. A lot of other directors, they have songs in their films, but they don't give them the space. It is very interesting to me that, you know, This Must Be the Place in Wall Street is given a lot of space, and that actually has caused This Must Be the Place to be catapulted into being a fan favorite. If we look at which songs have the most plays on streaming platforms, This Must Be the Place is one of the most.
You know, when you're talking about Jonathan Demme, like, how much input did you and the rest of the band have on staging and the visual style of the film? Did you have the vision that you passed on to Jonathan, or how did that all come about?
Well, he filmed the performance as it was.
Ah, okay.
So he had no influence on what we did, but he did make decisions on, let's have close-ups here, and let's have a distant shot here. And he has a lot of close-ups. And I think that he did a fantastic job of introducing each member of the band so that you felt you got to know everybody. And he would capture little conversations, so to speak, sometimes dancing together, but, you know, even Bernie and I standing next to each other, just leaning over and saying something to each other. And it showed this sort of intimacy and this sort of, in the same way that like a ensemble acting, you sort of note like two people sort of having their own relationship within the context of the bigger scene.
It is not easy to film a band and really capture who they are and what they're doing on stage in a live performance. It's not easy.
Yeah. I think that you have a lot of, there's a lot of, cliches, you know, the hands of a guitar player play a solo, or obviously the singer singing, and people fall back on those cliches because they are giving the detail of what maybe is in the forefront at that moment. But our performances were about all of these interlayered parts, and so it really is about the showing the this ensemble playing together. And what's so special about it is even though you have nine people playing, there's still a space and the ability to hear the different parts and how they interact with each other.
Were there any memorable behind-the-scenes moments with the crew or the band during the shoot that you remember?
It was pretty much as we were, but of course now there were more people around.
Yeah.
You know, we already had members of our crew walking around with handheld lights. So the idea that there could be a cameraman walking around wasn't shocking. Yet, you know, you're very aware that there's cameras and lighting and people in the audience. And we went to a great deal of effort to make sure there was sufficient people in the audience so that we really still had an audience that was reacting to the performances. And that's why it was shot over a number of nights. So, because we would rip out the seats to have a sort of like railroad tracks for a dolly with a big, heavy Panaflex 35-millimeter film camera coming down the railroad tracks. And one night it was coming down the middle, one night down the left side, one night down the right side. And then we picked the performance from each night that we felt best represented the band or was the best performance. So you do have shots that are a little out of sync because we did not play to a click track. We played. Chris would get his cue from a steady time, but then it was up to him to keep it that way. And of course, it wasn't perfectly like that. So the Lisa Day did a great job of doing have as good sync as possible. It was one of the dilemmas we had because we could have fixed all of that with the new digital tools that are available.
Yeah, right.
But we decided that that might change the character of the film too much.
And it was so iconic. I mean, just certain elements, you know, the oversized suit. You know, did you expect it to be called at any point in time the greatest concert film of all time?
Well, I don't think there were that many to compete with us at that time, so maybe. You know, I think that, there was sort of Don Kirshner Presents and things like that. So there were other live performances, but they didn't, none of them were as, they were more off-the-cuff performances, you might say, and captured, rather than really, you know, a really, really talented director becoming involved and doing a shoot over a number of days. So I don't think anyone had, you know, the film that is always compared to as The Last Waltz as being the sort of two best rock films. Yeah. And The Last Waltz includes conversations and guest appearances. It's a very different beast. So I do think that I think people followed in our footsteps. You too, you know, spent quite a bit of time doing a concert film. So I think that it's sort of going forward, people that were maybe inspired by Stop Making Sense far more than the films that predated it.
Talking Heads are celebrating their 50th anniversary and the 40th anniversary of their iconic concert film Stop Making Sense, restored in 4K and will be screened October 30th at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan with a live appearance by Jerry himself. And there's more with Jerry next on 720 WGN. We are talking to Jerry Harrison of Talking Heads. They are celebrating their 50th anniversary and the 40th anniversary of their iconic concert film Stop Making Sense. So what surprised you most when you watched the new 4K restoration, Jerry?
Oh, I was really involved in the restoration, which is why I'm going around and doing these talks, because when the four of us did the Q&As for about four or five performances in the very beginning, all of the technical things were things that I answered. And so I thought, well, you know, I think I could do a really satisfactory version of going around by myself of talking about the restoration. I mean, we found the negative and had it cleaned. It was rescanned. It was recolor balanced. I don't think the films ever looked better. I think, for instance, that the Tom Tom Club feels far more integrated into the film the way it's with the new scan and with the new color balancing. The Atmos mix is, you know, 11 speakers. I'm not sure if the Genesee Theater has Atmos or if it'll be more like a concert film where they do it with like a PA on stage and it's a stereo mix. Many of these have been that style. And I think there's sort of two ways to watch the film. One, maybe the ultimate is IMAX, where it's all gigantic and you have the surround film and you're just sort of, it's really an audiovisual experience. And then there's other ones where people get up in the aisles and dance, and it's more of a party atmosphere. I'm guessing that the Genesee is going to be more of a party atmosphere.
I think so, too. Did you find yourself, when you were doing this and so much a part of the restoration, that you're noticing details or emotions you had forgotten of that time?
Absolutely. I think that you'll see, like, you notice, like, a quick glance, maybe all the way across the stage from Alex to Bernie or something like that. And, you know, I just, when it wasn't as clear, I didn't see that.
Interesting. And on top of all of this, not only 40 years of this, but 50 years of Talking Heads. So, like, what do you think is the band's lasting impact on music and in culture?
Well, I think it's been interesting. It's grown over the years. I don't think that we ever imagined that we would have be quite as influential as we were. I think that the Talking Heads, we toured relentlessly, and I think we became became really good performers. I think we were amongst the most exciting bands in the world at the time of Stop Making Sense, and we very deliberately had different recording processes as well as trying to have different philosophies on each record. I think that this is one of the things that when bands made a record almost every year, there wasn't the pressure to repeat yourself. That sort of happened when CDs became preeminent and people started making longer and longer records and started selling 10 million records, that the record companies started to have a lot more influence on what we need. Another hit. We need, how are we going to sell this to everybody? And the commercial aspects rather than the artistic aspects became even more predominant. I think we were lucky to be part of the period where album-oriented rock was what people were interested in. I think music had a higher degree of influence in people's daily life back then. To me, Bob Dylan, the Beatles, the Stones had more influence on the culture than John Kennedy or film directors. I think that music was at the center of culture. certainly, you know, when Neil Young wrote the song Ohio about Kent State, it was really captured the emotions of that period. Right now with streaming, I think that music is more in the background of people's lives. It's like something that you do other things to rather than sitting down and very carefully listening to it. So I think there's been a lot of factors. I mean, I even think the length of CDs, it meant that everybody was almost making a double album and weren't forced to like only pick the best songs.
Different time yeah. of music for sure. Different time of music. When did you realize, Jerry, that Talking Heads was becoming bigger than you ever thought it was going to be? Like, there must have been a moment that you're like, okay, yeah, this is a thing.
When we moved beyond theaters.
Ah.
I always knew that we would be an artistic success, but I had no idea what kind of commercial success we have the potential to be.
Very cool.
I thought we were pretty unique and pretty out there to speak of. I think it's like we became a little bit more, I guess, professional, but not, we didn't really like sort of give up our artistic ideas. And I also think that the audience matured and we became more relevant as the years went by.
Also, the fact that you guys all stayed together. I mean, there was never, you know, so many bands over a long period of time. There's a replacement here. There's a replacement here. There's one person left from the original band that are still part of the story. And you guys have always been together.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Talking Heads celebrating their 50th anniversary and the 40th anniversary of their iconic concert film Stop Making Sense, restored in 4K, and will be screened October 30th at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan with a live appearance by Jerry Harrison. And for tickets, go to GeneseeTheater.com. Jerry, a pleasure talking to you, and can't wait to see you here in Chicago.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are next here on 720 WGN.